Hello, and welcome again to Parent is a Verb on OU Radio. I'm Dr. Barry Holzer.
And I'm Chani Holzer.
And today, we're here to talk about raising challenging children.
What does challenging mean exactly?
Well, we have to understand that not every child is created equal. You'll have parents who, they'll have, the first two or three kids, they seem to go along smoothly, things are fine, and all of a sudden they get a child where they're having such difficulties managing this child, dealing with their behavior, the kids, seems to be always either angry, fighting, riles everybody up, creates a lot of tension in the house.
It's the kid who's capable of coming home and inside of 2 minutes the whole house is on its ear.
Right. And I have parents recently where it was their first child who was so difficult. And when they actually had a second child, they said, boy, there's something really wrong with the first one because, it shouldn't be so hard. And it's always been so hard. Right. So that parents have to realize that, for the average kid, parenting is usually not that difficult. Follow certain basic rules, and it moves along pretty smoothly. But about 25% of kids can be called challenging or difficult. And they could be that way for a variety of reasons. Okay. Right. Some kids are just more temperamental or moody. Okay. They get upset much more easily.
The sensitive child.
Right. Some kids can be irritable, often goes along with some hyperactivity, so they get angry very easily, things bother them more. Some kids have sensory sensitivities, certain foods bother them, or clothing, their skin, things irritate them, sound bothers them, they can have a lot of different issues.
And then there's also the highly anxious child who seems to be wired in a way that everything, or maybe not everything, but a lot of things make them worry or make them afraid, and it's difficult for them to leave home. And sometimes children like this become very clingy to a parent or to the house. They don't want to leave the parent. They don't want to go to camp. They don't want to go to school.
They may even have a problem going to sleep.
Right.
Because it means, they're alone in their room, or even it's darker in the room, or everybody else is downstairs still, or their sibling in the room is sleeping already, and they feel alone. So that when you have an anxious child, it becomes very difficult for them. And then some kids are just more explosive. Mm-hmm. Things that the other kids would get a little bit upset and calm down in a couple of minutes, this kid explodes and has an explosion for 20 or 30 minutes or longer. And that's really very hard on parents.
Well, I think it's hard on parents, and it also seems to me it's hard on the whole family, because what happens to the kids who just seem like, the regular kids who are also irritated terribly? And, how do you parent both the child who seems to be going on course and the child who seems to be particularly challenging? How do you parent that simultaneously?
Right. And it's especially difficult because sometimes the younger children are getting beat up or verbally attacked. And the older children feel like, how come this kid is getting all this special attention and taking so much of your time up, and you're always doing stuff, you always seem to be focused on this one.
And then sometimes, what we've seen also is that those kids start acting out as a result. And a lot of parents believe, now she's just copying her sister, who's also who just is the kid who explodes all the time. So the younger one is following what the older one is doing. I'm not sure that's necessarily true. Maybe it is, because that's how the child thinks they're going to get attention also.
Right. By nature, you're going to use what seems to work to get attention. And if that's what's being modeled and they're seeing, then that's what they're going
to
do.
Right. Because to them, I guess the way they experience it is as, not an even distribution of mom and dad's time.
Right. So it's more likely that a younger child will mimic the behavior and an older child will resent it.
Right. That's an important differentiation. The older children resent it, and the younger children really do feel right, like they can, they want to start copying it, because that's what gets the family, that's what gets noticed.
So what we first need to do is change, I think, the whole way we look at the situation. Because what happens is parents get involved in this cycle of, you know, misbehavior or difficult behaviors, reprimanding, yelling at the kid, or punishing. Okay, and, you know, a period of a lull, and then the behavior repeats itself, and the parents get angry again. And this cycle keeps continuing, and parents see this as the bad child or the difficult child or, you know, the child who's giving them grief.
And well, also, I don't think the parents see it that way, and I think the child starts experiencing themselves that way, which really kind of perpetuates the cycle.
So that we have to come up with an approach that's going to break this cycle and change how, you know, the child views themselves, how the parents view the child, you know, what's going on. Now, as a proviso, some children can be so impulsive or so sensitive or so explosive that without real professional help and treatment, things really are not going to change significantly. But for many, many children, changing the way we interact with our child will have a significant impact. For example, well, the first thing I want you to do is just instead of calling the child wild or out of control, think of them as energetic.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what basically you're talking about is reframing how you yourself see and then maybe even therefore experience the child.
Reframing for the child his own behavior, his or her own behavior, you know, and now this is not to take away. Now, look, I want to put in a proviso here because you'll have kids climbing the wall in the classroom in, you know, fifth grade, and the school will call on the parents and say, we can't teach this kid. And they'll say, oh, he's just a little energetic, you know, and blame the school. No, that's not what we're talking about. If a child really can't function in a normal setting, then there, you know, you should be getting professional help. And we've talked about that before of when to seek help.
Yes.
But in a child who just needs to run around for an hour and a half or 2 hours in the park and isn't satisfied with half an hour or 45 minutes, they have more energy. They are more energetic. And we have to recognize that and address it. If a child is, you know, seemingly always anxious, okay, we can talk about their being cautious.
Right.
Okay? And there are positive as well as negative aspects of being cautious.
I like the cautious child who, you know, walks into the swimming pool area and is not going to jump off the diving board, well, you know, if you turn your back for 30 seconds.
Right.
That kind of, I actually like that behavior in a child.
Right. There are some positive aspects to each of these behaviors. Given the correct situation, these children really are in some ways better, easier. You know, they do well.
Well, I think also what you're alluding to is that at some point creating situations where these kids get to really show their stuff in a good way.
So we want to certainly help them shine. And we've got to think of them in terms of their abilities, not
what they're showing that really seems to be disrupting and upsetting, or not letting their characteristics disrupt and upset the entire household.
So if they're argumentative or stubborn, they're also determined. And sometimes being very determined and persistent helps you achieve a goal.
Right. It's just it has to be channeled so that it's positive as opposed to, you know, breaking things up and getting in the way.
So how are we going to help our children channel these characteristics and these energies? The first thing we need to do, we've talked about this in other contexts, is relationship building. But relationship building here has a different connotation because generally what's happened is that the relationship has become very conflicted. There's a lot of yelling. There's a lot of arguing. We're very upset with them, you know. And therefore, we have to think back not in terms of, you know, our own history of relationship with our parents and what our expectations are, but, you know, how can I, you know, recognize the positive in my child? How can I build a positive relationship? What can I do with my child that's going to be something that they're going to feel good about doing with me?
Well, first, you know, first and foremost, as we alluded to already, I think it's really taking a deep breath and getting perspective, taking two steps backwards and really seeing if you can look at the situation with your spouse, hopefully, more objectively. Really, what's going on here? And how do we need to address this in a more positive way?
If I have a child where I try to play a board game with them, but they lose interest after 7 minutes, okay, even though they're 5 or 6 years old, but if I go outside and I do relay races with them, or I play ball with them, I play catch, they can do that for 20 or 30 minutes. So therefore, I want to focus my spending time with them. That's what you need to do, is take specific time that's going to be positive play time and say, okay, I'm going to spend 15, 20 minutes, half an hour with my child 2-3 times a week for each parent, and just doing positive interaction, just doing something the child enjoys. And letting them pick or have some choice in what the activity is.
Right. I think this is also, you know, speaking to kind of training yourself as a parent to be intuitive and responsive to what the child needs.
Yes.
You know, it's really not as automatic as a child who doesn't pose more challenging behavior.
Right. So that whereas this might come more naturally or easily with a child who's easygoing, and we might find lots of activities where we can do this, and it's easy to spend time together. Here, we may have to make more of an effort at spending the time in positive ways.
It takes thought, creativity, planning. It really does. It doesn't just happen by itself, and it takes work. This is work.
Right, but that's the idea. Our idea of positive parenting, active parenting, is that if we really value what parenting is, if we recognize that parenting is our most important job, and then we're mindful that each moment has a value to it. The interaction, the relationship is really what counts. And the relationship is the most powerful thing in teaching our children and helping our children grow. And therefore, if the relationship is broken down, we have to work on building the relationship.
Right. And it's interesting because when you talk to kids a little bit later on as they become young adults, it's amazing what they come up with as the moment that was like, was a great moment with my parents. And it could have been something as, you know, inane or seemingly simple as, well, my mother recognized that I really liked doing this type of project. So I came home from school one day and there was lots of this type of project in the house. And it felt so good that someone, namely my mother, got it. She got what I needed. Kids report this stuff back years later. It's fascinating.
And it could be very simple stuff that sold at amazing savings. Right? Even things like making potholders.
Right. I was thinking about those potholders. I think we have too many potholders right now. But,
yes. But we have a child who's enjoying making potholders, so we're getting lots of them, and they're very pretty and colorful.
And soon we're going to start shipping them to Africa, because I'm sure somebody there needs potholders.
If we therefore focus on how we can use ourselves to train, teach, help our children, the question is, what works?
Right. Okay. It's really figuring out what works. And I think a lot of that what works is trial and error. It's kind of paying attention to what your child, you know, does naturally that seems to be disruptive, and seeing how you can think about that disruptive, you know, behavior and kind of move it in a more positive direction. It's a very individual thing.
Right. Now, I think what I want parents to understand is that in general terms, what works is that children want attention. They want approval. They want to be loved. They want to feel important, especially in their parents' eyes. Okay. So when I give them attention and approval and show my love, I am elevating the relationship. Okay. If the way they get their attention is mostly as a result of bad behavior, then by giving attention to bad behavior, I am reinforcing bad behavior. I'm giving them the message, right? unconsciously, that bad behavior gets my attention. And very often what happens is when a difficult child is being quiet and being good, we just leave them alone now. Don't interrupt.
Right. Let's not spoil a good thing.
Right. As opposed to going over and saying, I'm so proud you've been playing so nicely. You've been so nice to your sister. I'm so proud of, you know, you made her feel good. You know, there are lots of things that kids do throughout the day. And for our sanity, as well as helping them, we need to
catch them doing something good and let them know it.
And so really catching them being good, I think, is a key issue. We're very good at catching them being bad, but we're not nearly as good.
Or attentive to when they're doing good, when they are cooperating, when they're just being that kid that, you know, isn't exploding all over the house, and they're just doing something quietly, nicely, on time, with focus. We forget to tell them, you know, how and notice that and let them know that we notice it.
When we catch them being good, we're able to express our approval, tell them we're proud of you, you're doing a good job. That really helps reinforce and cement the positive relationship. And it's reinforcing the positive behaviors that they're doing. So we need to do that. We need to do more active listening. It's very often challenging children are not that expressive and not always very good at themselves expressing. Younger children in general can't tell you how they're feeling necessarily.
But, one thing that I tried with, you know, parents and people report back that it often works is really giving a list of words to kids and allowing them to, you know, use that list of words. I'm feeling very angry now. It really is about teaching them how to express emotions also. You know, having a list of angry, happy, sad, frustrated.
Right, because for a lot of children, their difficult behaviors or explosions are an expression of their difficulty verbalizing. Because they can't express it in another way, they get very agitated. And they feel that nobody can ever understand what they're going through or what they're feeling or what they want to express. And therefore, they act it out as opposed to verbalizing.
Right. So even reflecting back to the child, you know, if they know what the word means, if it's been, you know, reviewed, oh, I see you're very frustrated because you're doing A, B, and C. That means to me that you're very frustrated. The tension sometimes just runs right out of their bodies because somebody actually gets how they're feeling.
Right. And they may not come home and tell you what they're upset about. But if you ask and you actively listen and you empathize, okay, you can diffuse some of the pent-up emotion by just being there, accessing it, and empathizing with it. And then once you really are getting a better relationship, then we can really work on modeling and changing their behavior a little bit at a time. So that if I feel my relationship with my child has really improved, then people understand well, the reason that behavior modification, quote unquote, works, the reason that reward systems, not bribing, reward systems work, is the best reward system is not when I pay you a huge amount, sum, or give you some phenomenal prize, you know, giving them a Wii gaming system for, beating up their sister for a week is not going to really help their behavior.
Disproportionate reward.
That doesn't work. What works is the rewards that really focus on the approval. When my reward, and therefore the rewards I like best are often experiential ones. We'll go out for pizza, we'll go take you bowling, we'll do something special as a result of your accomplishing certain goals. And you pick two goals, okay, tops three, and simple things. So if it's a matter of, you can pick something like no hitting, and you know, every day is split into three parts, you know, morning, afternoon, evening, and they can get 3 stars or they can get, you know, 5 points for each period. And if they're in school, so that that period doesn't count. But basically, you figure out how many points or how many stars they can get in the course of a week. And if they can pretty much get around 2/3, around, you know, 65-66%, that's worthy of a reward.
And one thing I think that's also really important to mention, and I don't know that we've touched on it yet, is that to try to minimize the amount of attention you pay to their poor behavior or their inappropriate behavior, to keep focusing more and more on the positive. Sometimes when you just ignore the inappropriate or untoward behavior, it diminishes just because it's been ignored. You're not feeding it. It's like not giving any fuel to the fire.
Right. I think that's the flip side of what we're saying, which is really key, because if I keep giving attention to the behaviors that make me crazy, then I'm working against myself. I have to actively work to ignore the behaviors that bother me. And if they're having a tantrum in the middle of the room, what's really interesting is then you put video cameras in the house. When the parent walks out, the tantrums often, stop. And then as soon as the parent walks back in, tantrum starts all over again. If you give attention to a tantrum, it will start. And, parents say, but they follow me around. Okay, so I tell them, walk outside, go to your bedroom, lock the door. You have to, if you're not giving it attention, you're not fueling it. If you give it attention, you are fueling it. So the key are, we're going to give attention and good positive attention to positive behaviors, whether we ask for them or not. We're going to avoid giving attention to really negative behaviors. And we're going to then focus on a couple of behaviors to start modeling and changing the behaviors. And, and that can be, something that as simple as being ready for bed on time or clearing the dishes from the table. We can work on simple things. We can work on more general things, but just don't work on too much at once. The other thing is, as they accomplish certain goals, change it. If they can't accomplish the goals, then make it simpler. They need to win in order for this to work.
Oh, that's absolutely true. They have to feel success. Otherwise, it's just another exercise in frustration for them. And they've had more than enough frustration to start with. That's what started this whole process in the first place, is their own frustration with the world, with themselves, with their inability to negotiate the world in a calmer, easier way. So it's really giving them, allowing them to have success, because the success breeds success.
I know many of the things that we've talked about in other sessions here, in terms of improving structure in the home, making things very predictable for them, having the same thing the same time, very helpful for kids who are having problems. But specifically for challenging children, where we really need to mold and change their behaviors, this is really a key way to start out.
How would you go about adjusting, let's say, a child who has outbursts at their siblings? Let's talk maybe something specific. There's a kid who's beating up the other kids.
And how old is the child?
Okay, let's see. This fictitious child is...
Are we talking about a 6-7-year-old? We're talking about a
9-year-old.
Okay, and the siblings are younger or older?
Siblings are younger.
Okay, and so first you want to spend time with the children together playing. I had a mother recently who reported that, that she's so busy that she doesn't really have time to sit and play with the kids because she's got to clean up from supper. She's got to get them to bed then after. And I say, you know what? And if the dishes get done a couple hours later, okay, that's not going to make a big difference in the house.
Well, sometimes it's a whole lot easier to wash the dishes, as unpleasant as that can be, than to try to negotiate 3 or 4 children simultaneously.
Right. And what you really need to do is sit yourself down and be involved, okay? Because if you model the proper behavior, if you show them how to spend time together, you don't have to spend all the playtime with them, but you need to spend 20 minutes.
And the truth is, I think that it's challenging for a lot of parents because that wasn't modeled for them. Very often, mom was busy with housework. I've heard this over and over again. My mother never sat down and played with me. Why the heck should I be doing that with my kid? Like, that doesn't seem even like parenting appropriate. And it's really about, educating and saying, being involved with your child at their level is extremely appropriate, even if that wasn't part of your own maternal, paternal experience.
Right. And play is a learning experience for children. Play is a social experience for children. Play is also where their emotional experiences are expressed. So that, you know, you'll learn so much about your children when you really play with them and listen. And you'll get to understand them better, and you'll be able to interact and really help them grow.
Okay, let's get back to the 9-year-old who's beating up the siblings.
Okay, so when you're spending time together with them, you can guide his behavior. Okay, you can intervene before and model for him other ways of playing or dealing with the situations, okay, that are erupting. Or you'll see how the problems develop.
Well, I think that, you know, even just noticing how the particular issues develop is key, even if you don't have the solutions for them right away, because at least you've identified what's going on. Because most often, if you're not there in the moment, you know, the kids start reporting back and forth. It's like a mushmash, and you don't know who and what to believe. But if you're there and you can kind of hone in on and identify what is going on, that's already a beginning. At least you can have something to focus on and think about.
And then you can plan around that, because if it's a specific child that they seem to erupt with, right, then you can go ahead and try to limit the interaction between the two of them. Have this one play in one room and this one play in play something else. Work on the homework with this one while he's playing, and then switch so that they're not together as much time.
Or even coming up, you know, that's true, and that's a wonderful solution. I'm even thinking about, you know, having an activity for the two of them where they both can be successful in that activity with a parent's guidance.
Right. Or what I love to do when two children fight often is put them both on a reward system that for not fighting, the two of them get rewarded, which means if they fight...
Teamwork.
Right. It's teamwork building. If they fight, it makes no difference who started. That's not the question. If they're fighting, they can't get rewarded. If they don't fight, they do get rewarded. So therefore, it's mutually beneficial for them not to fight.
Good motivation.
Right. And this works like a charm, because if there's a meaningful reward, they both want to get it.
Yes.
Okay. And the only way that one can not lose it and the other not is if, you know, one starts swinging at the other comes right running to you right away.
But I think, right,
but
yes,
it's still not going to be the same value for them as if there's just no fighting. And they'll learn that very quickly.
Yes, and I think also as a parent, understanding that this may not happen all in one Wednesday evening at home. This may take a bunch of Wednesday evenings to identify the identify the issues and the dynamics, and then think of ways to, you know, alter that and change that and make it much more positive. This
right.
isn't a one-shot Wednesday night and we're, you know, okay, let me put the dishes down for 45 minutes and pay attention. This may take several interactions.
Right. Parents have to understand that this takes 2-3 months, but at the end of 2 or 3 months, their home is a much happier, calmer place, and they're much happier. But it takes a lot of real involvement. So again, we want to build the relationship, find their positive attributes, work with them at catching them being good and developing the positive attributes they have. Have a good structure and schedule. Work on reinforcements of just approval and positive attention, natural rewards. You know, if they like finishing homework early, you get more playtime just naturally. Mm-hmm. Okay. Reward systems for specific important issues that will be helpful, whether they're large or small. You know, just set up your priorities and the satisfaction they and you will have in their accomplishing goals. So we've got to set up a system that is fixed, that they win. Okay, we want a system of if they can't accomplish the goals, then you're asking too much. We've got to do better. And if it's still not working, then you really should seek professional help, because there is something more significantly wrong.
Right, and maybe the system does need some professional insight to tweak it and to make it work better.
Thank you very much for joining us today. This has been Parent is a Verb on OU Radio. If you would like to send us questions or ideas for future shows, please email us at parentisaverb@ou.org. Thank you.